on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Good evening, wherever you may be. Welcome along to another edition of The Orient Hour. I'm Andy Gilson in the Brentwood studios of Phoenix FM. I'm joined tonight by Christian Wheeler, Barry Galvin and Lee Boyce, all in the studio. All looking very happy because, Lee, there's been a bit of activity on the transfer front.
Yes, we've got another player in, Connor Wood, has been muted for a while, and today he's signed from Bradford. So, yeah, everything's looking good. Players starting to come through the door.
So how many players is that this week now? Three, isn't it? Three. Yeah, so things are moving,
three,
Barry.
Isn't it? Omar Bogle, Connor Wood.
Beckles.
And, oh, no, Prattley was last week, wasn't it?
Omar Beckles.
Bogle.
Beckles.
Omar Beckles.
Yeah. Signed him, though.
Sorry. Darren Prattley was last week, so three in total, and I think three out as well, wasn't it? So.
Mm-hmm. It's all been happening. Christian, you, are you pleased with these signings so far?
I don't really know much about Wood. Very much pleased with Prattley and Beckles. I think that's two players that have played a mountain of games in the last couple of years in Division 1. Wood's obviously someone that wants to come back down south. Good old Harlow boy. Seen some mixed reviews, good and bad for him. I think he had the first good couple of years there and maybe tailed off last season. So it'd be a good move for him to revitalise his career.
And Beckles is an interesting one because he's a Leytonstone lad, isn't he? So he's come back. And do you think this is the right thing to sort of maybe you were disappointed with Happy? You said that. You thought he'd stagnated. And do you think this is a sort of player that will bring the best back out of Happy?
I don't know. I don't know whether Happy's going to re-sign. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk that he's going to re-sign and he's got another two-year deal coming. But for me, I'm very impressed with his interview, Beckles. I think the way he come across, the way he wants to be dominant and be aggressive and be in people's face, that's exactly what I was asking for a couple of weeks ago. So him and Thompson and maybe Happy in the mix will be a very good mix.
Yeah, I mean, Dan Happy, I've said many times, yeah, he didn't have his best season, but when you look at the amount of times the defence was changed last season, I don't think that helped. So when you've got like Beckles and Thompson and Happy, I mean, personally, I'd like to see a back three coming on there and maybe a couple of wing-backs coming in.
Yeah, I was saying last year, actually, 3-5-2 is what we were calling for last year. And if we've got three quality centre-backs, we can start to play that, especially if we've got pace in the wing-back positions as well. And, I think, Dan, we all struggled last year, didn't we? I think, you know, as supporters, as a club, as players, and it affects some people differently to others, but the whole thing felt a little bit lethargic from all walks, didn't it, in the club. And I think he just didn't have the season that he had before, but he's undoubtedly a quality player and he's young. And I think, let's see what he can do next season.
So the back room's obviously been improved and we've got a strong managerial setup there, haven't we?
It's a lot of experience, there. I mean, I think Joe Gallen, I mean, I remember when he was at Millwall in the academy and obviously Kenny Jackett, knew him through there when Kenny Jackett became manager. So he's worked with him for a few years. And Simon Royce, obviously experienced goalkeeper, good goalkeeping coach by all accounts. And we're certainly getting some big hitters through the door on the pitch and in the playing stuff.
I mean, numbers-wise, Christian, how many signings do you think we need? Because we obviously are still very thin on the ground.
I've been writing it down in my trusty book. I think that makes it that we've got three left-backs now. Obviously, Wood's the more senior one over Sweeney and Ogie. Beckles and Thompson, centre-half. Byrne and Sargent in goal. A couple of young boys, and then Hector, Prattley, Clay and Cisse in midfield. You've got Kemp and Ruel. So still need a couple of experienced centre-forwards, and depending on what sort of... I would be surprised if he plays 3-5-2, as I say, if Hap signs, you know, you've got three quality centre-halves to play that, but I'll be interested to see what type of full-back he signs. I think that what type of full-back he signs will give indication of what formation that he's going to play, but we haven't got anyone down the right-hand side yet, so it'd be interesting to see what we do with that.
I mean, it'd be a brave person to put out 3-5-2, wouldn't it?
It depends the players that you've got and how you can rotate them around. I'd be very surprised if Gallen and Jacket play 3-5-2, but you know, if you get the players in that suit it, for me, you know, look at them players so far, it's where you're going to get Kemp in that team. 3-5-2 might be the only way that you do get him in that team. I can't see Beckles, Thompson or Happ not playing. You've obviously got Prattley and Clay in there with Hector, but as I say, for me, I still want a big target man, another centre forward, and if we can get some real out and out pace down the right, that'd be great for me.
Yeah, I mean, Lee, I think the thing, if there was any criticism last season, and I think it was the fact that Orient were going out there trying not to lose a football match rather than going out there to play a match to win it. They were more set up to not lose. Inevitably, things were going to go wrong. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, to win a game, you've got to make sure you don't lose it to start with, sort of thing. And as big as our squad was last year, I think it showed that it wasn't a very strong squad. You had probably 11, 12 players in it that were good enough to challenge top end. The rest weren't nowhere near that quality. So it was limited formation-wise, and the changes that could be made was limited considering the size of the squad. But I think there was times where we looked to not lose a game. Like I say, yeah, at the end of the day, is that more to do with the quality of the forward sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. Well, without giving the game away, we've got an Orient Hour extra coming up, I think, tomorrow evening. It will be out, I think, or sometime tomorrow it will be out. Without giving the game away, Lee, you spoke at length with James Brophy and with Ross Embleton for that programme. How are they? And is there a lot of reasons why James has gone?
Yeah, I mean, me and Darren Burrows done an interview with him. It was quite enlightening, really, especially from James Brophy. Some of the things he sort of said, he's very open and very honest, and as you'd expect from James Brophy. It's going to be a good listen. There's a good few bits that may change people's minds. Probably there's a few people that won't change their mind no matter what.
Okay, right. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to come back and have a chat with us lot after this. We've got part two of Jabo Ibiri's interview. You may remember last week we had the first half, and Jabo, he doesn't mind talking, does he? He talks quite well, doesn't he? And very entertaining lad. And we had to split the interview into two halves. So this is part two then of Jabo Ibiri with Bill last week. And I hope you enjoyed this one. We'll be back with the lads to have a little chat afterwards.
So you end up, so you signed for Colchester permanently. Now, in the second season when you were at Colchester, a guy called Tony Hume took over the club. Now, allegedly, and I say this allegedly, you refused to play for him. Is that correct? What are the circumstances around that?
Allegedly, what happened was, so basically, Joe Dunn, like I said, alluded to before, fantastic guy, great guy. And that's half the reason I went there, because the man was top, top, top draw guy, really good gentleman. So obviously I was very loyal to him. And I don't think the way his departure transpired, you know, I'm a man's man, I'm an honest guy, I'm straight. And I don't think the way things happened for him leaving didn't sit necessarily right with me. So I signed for Joe. I signed to be with him because he became the permanent manager after when I first came as assistant, then he got the permanent manager's role. So I signed for him. Mr. Hume took over again, no qualms with Tony Humes. Good way of thinking, wanting me to kind of help, because coaches have a good way of like bringing young players through. I was a good professional, so they kind of want me to help, you know, lead by example, things like that. But like I said to them at the time, I felt at that moment there was time for change for me. I wanted to move on. I didn't feel that I had the same passion maybe that I had with Joe Dunn. No problem with Tony Hughes, just the fact my feeling around the place had changed, and I always want to give my best. I didn't feel at that moment in time I probably could do my best for them. So I kind of made that clear. Obviously, you're under contract. So, you know, and it happens. These things happen in football. And again, it was another test of character for myself, because I'm a straight guy and, you know, I do things right. But for once, had to be the I wouldn't say the baddie, but had to turn the other cheek to try and sort of ultimately force a move away. You know, it's my career. It's a short, you know, you have to make the most of it. And if the shoe was on the other foot and they want to get rid of you, they'll exile you to somewhere else. So it kind of, it's a fine line. But I had to play the game, and it was an interesting back and forth. It was quite funny, to be fair. I would come in some days. I think it initially started because I was injured. I had an injury, and they kind of didn't believe I was injured. I had a genuine groin injury, and I was like, the physio would be like, oh, you'll be back in 2 weeks. Nah, probably back in 3 or 4. I need to get it right. And then when I came back to fitness, I had a cold. I really had a cold. And I remember being at home, rang in sick. And they're like, oh, yeah, you need to come in and see the club doctor. And I was like, I live in London, North London. This is like Essex, Colchester. I'm like, it's an hour and a half away. Well, I've got a doctor down the road. There's no need for me to come in. But they've made me travel all the way in. The doctor's allegedly going to be at the training ground. I get there, no doctor.
Oh, like,
kidding me. They're like, yeah, no, the doctor called in sick as well, Jab. So I said, no, okay, cool. We're playing those games now. So then it was just back and forth. Well, I found it funny. And then I had to get a doctor's note, and then I knew my rights. And then I was training here, there. I come in, I wouldn't have kit. I have my kit, but no pants. I have my top, but no shorts. And it got a bit like that. And then I was just kind of had to do what I had to do to kind of get away, which I did. And again, you back yourself, you test your character. You know, you have to turn the other cheek to do what's right for you. But yeah, no disrespect to Tony Hume. Great, great gentleman, great guy. It was just, I knew for me at that point, if my heart's not in it, I'm not going to give you my best, and then you just had to do a couple of things to sort of move away from that situation.
Now, ironically, you said you'd obviously stayed down south and been keen to stay down south because you're a London boy, but yet when you moved to Carlisle, you had 2 seasons, which were your best goal scoring seasons. You should have gone up there earlier.
Like I said, man, comfort zone. Comfort zone is an amazing thing, because, you know, and again, though, what was interesting, every time when I made moves and stuff like that, I mean, funny enough, in between that, when I left, just before I left Colchester, so I went to Barnsley, and that was my first experience of being real north, you know? And because I handled that, it led me to think when Carlisle came knocking, okay, I've had a bit of a taste, you know, I was slightly prepared, but not fully prepared. But what made me do the move was simply the manager. Most times when I used to weigh up moves and stuff, it would be done on location first. How far is it from my house? You know, and then it would be ultimately how much is my like contract worth and blah, blah, blah. And then what football, how it's going to help me and the coach is going to make me better. But for one of the first times, the manager just took my breath away. How he spoke, what he said, you know, it was music to my ears. And he ultimately said, look, you're at a stage where you know how to play the game now, blah, blah, blah. You do well for me. I don't really have to see you up here. You know, you can do your training in London and just come up later part of the week. You know how to get yourself ready. So it made it very attractive. You know, I was looked after in terms of like the bonuses. Like you had to earn, like you had good bonuses, but you had to earn them through performance as well. But the manager and the assistant manager was amazing. Really, really good. And for once, I was just sold on. If I'm honest, like when I knew they came in, I was like, no chance. I'll never go that far. Everything to my agent. But I've always spoke to every single manager. I would meet them out of respect because you don't know where they're going to end up in a couple of years' time. You know, they've shown the interest. It's always good to sort of put yourself in good light and speak to everyone that's interested you because they like you. So why not give them your time? So I always spoke to them. And I was lucky that I did speak to Keith Carr, met them in Manchester. It's the best, one of the best conversations I had. Then I went to Carlisle, looked around, and the pitches, just the first team pitch was unbelievable. Just the pitch at the stadium was class. And at that point, I was like, okay. But how far is it from London? And then it's like 4 hours, I think 3 and a bit hours on the train, 5 hour, 6 hour drive. I was like, I don't know about this. Conversations went on. And then I knew there was a Southern club interested, but they didn't push the button. And then there was another club that I was waiting for that was South. And at this point, I was like, you know, I'm happy to stay down South. But then Keith Cole was ringing. So you know what I said? You know what? I'll go and do well, and I won't be here most of the time. So that was my like attitude. So I said, cool, I'll do it. So I've gone up there. I've got my agent, I've signed. As I walked out the door, Portsmouth agreed. And I was like, I knew it. I was just like, and because it happened just before, like, so I signed, but it doesn't get lodged until July the 1st because your contract runs out to June. So, like, I've signed, but it's not official. So I was like, and literally, as we're outside the door in the car park, boom, get the call. I was like, I knew it. But being the person I am, I'm a man of my word. So I was like, So I was like, cool, do it. So I done the signed, got put in the drawer. And then I've gone, so my agent's left me. I'm in this like apartment hotel place, really nice. And I missed it, everyone's down south. And I'm just like, okay, cool. I'm looking around, I looked out the window, and I'm not seeing familiar shops, I'm not seeing familiar things. And like, I think that only just got Nando's up there maybe last year. I was like, where am I? And I had started, it was far from a panic attack, but I was just like, I don't think I can do this. Rang my agent, no, speak to him, I want to come back. And he's like, calm down, go training tomorrow. It will be like, you know, if you feel that way in a couple of days' time, we can do something. So I've gone training, and then there's someone I knew from playing previously with Michael Rains, who just signed, great guy. And we got on really well, calmed me down a bit. Next training session, loved it. The rest was history. What a place. Honestly, what a place. Unbelievable. Loved it, you know? So it's amazing. Yeah.
Do you remember coming back on the train after playing Orient with the Orient fans on the train back to London from Carlisle? Do you remember that? Do you remember coming through the carriage and we were all singing your name and, you know, the Adelaide respect and love for you?
Yeah. I mean, again, it was... I used to take a train pretty much after every single game I was on that train. And, yeah, I actually do because I remember... I think her name's, is it Karen? I think.
Karen. Yeah, she's involved in that coach. Great.
Yeah. So, I remember that. And it was just class, mate. It was class.
We were all pretty drunk because there's normally.
Playing
away a lot. And, it was just the whole carriage was singing Jabbo. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've never been a very imaginative bunch with our songs, have we? You know, most of our songs, bless us, have all been just the player's name, and that's pretty much been it. You know, we're famous for Orient, clap, clap, clap.
Yeah. But it worked, though. It worked, had a nice ring to it. You know what I mean? Loved it. And I think I had the perfect name, Jabbo, Jabbo. Kind of, you know, but I remember that. And I just always remember, like, after a game, I'd be like, cool, I've got a train and I have to get showered, quickly get on that train back to London, because there wasn't many trains back to London after six, you're done, sort of thing. So I needed to escape. But man alive, one of the best 2 years of my football career, man. The people, the area, so much you can do, so much you learn about yourself. And the fans, again, were very passionate, loved the team, loved football. You know, they knew who I weren't from up there, but they made me very welcome. You know, there was such a... That's a shame, but, you know, up north, you get that real connection, more values that everyone gets along. Everyone wants to help each other. Their neighbour knows the next door neighbour. He knows what's going on over there. You know, there's a real group collective. And when they had the floods up there, the unfortunate floods, you see the community just get together. You know, and I think sometimes that's lost down south. You know, you don't get that same, you know, community feel that you kind of get in the northern club, that real passion.
You get it with smaller communities everywhere. And London's a big conurbation, isn't it? So we get a little bit caught up sometimes in that and lost. Yeah. We lose that a little bit, I agree.
Yeah, you know, and I felt a lot of that being up there. And I think it gives you the spirit to really perform, not just for yourself and the team, but for the whole. You know, people knew the result. People knew everything, and they really were part of it, and you felt part of that. And I think that gave you that extra push to do things right whilst you're up there. And it says when you get older, you can't be better, you know? And I think I scored, like, ridiculous number of goals very quickly as well. I think I scored 10 goals by, like, September or something one time. But you were just focused, you were on it, and you were driven by the community, man. So, again, I was a bit nervous and a bit, I'm going to say scared is a strong word, but I was a bit like, ooh, slightly apprehensive, thinking, where am I going to? But, man alive, it really made me feel welcome.
Your record was superb as well. You're talking about your time up there, 27 goals in 74 appearances.
That's just in the league.
It was 31 goals in total, wasn't it?
Something like that. You know, and honestly, it wasn't for the injury. Again, I always seem to get injured at crucial times, but I think I scored X amount of goals so quickly, then I pulled my hamstring, then I didn't get fit till about December, January times, and I went again. But I was on such a run and such a momentum there. God knows what we could have finished. And we got to the playoffs, but didn't quite win the playoffs and stuff, which was a shame. And then I signed a 2-year deal up there, and the final year, you know, it was a tough one because I really enjoyed it, but at the same time the travelling would kill me, because I was literally going back to London and back and forth and often, and I was getting older, it was just beginning to grind on me a little bit, you know. I would have loved to stay there. If it was closer to my house, would have retired there happily, you know, and it would still be playing there now if I could. But it was a great time.
Well, Gemma, let's talk about your retirement, because I see. So after Carlisle, you then moved to Cambridge, and your retirement came around after a bit of a freak injury, didn't it? You nearly lost your leg. Is that right?
Yeah, literally. I mean, again, at the time it all happened, I didn't really understand the severity of it until. Like you process it now, and it was serious, man. It was really bad. I mean, innocuous injury. I give it that. You know, not often a keeper bites your leg in a collision, and then not only he bites my leg, his teeth get like lost in my knee. So you know, it happened in a match, and what I remember is between the impact. And then just walking off the pitch, like, oh, this is sore, and had a big gash across my knee. And at the time, we all thought, we knew the keeper lost his teeth. He was in hysterics, blood pouring through his mouth and everything. Looking at my knee, they assumed it was, obviously, we needed to be stitched up and cleaned out and closed, whatever. So then they did that. I've gone home. And luckily for me, my body kind of reacted in a way that it did, because I was given antibiotics, and if they kind of worked or masked the pain, I'd be none the wiser, you know, and it would have been, I would have been in trouble. So then I've gone home and I was in, it happened on a Tuesday. I think by 11 o'clock Tuesday night, I was in unbearable pain. And I woke up Wednesday and my knee was like the size of a bowling ball, really swollen, and I couldn't put no weight on it. So I rang the physio telling him, like, you know what, something serious happened there, because it just can't be just from like a gash. So he said, come in on Thursday. And I wasn't going to come in Thursday. It was thanks to my teammate who we car school with, who kind of forced me to go in because I was in too much pain. I said, look, just get the game ready machine, give me some crutches, and, you know, I'm on air brakes, it will settle. But he forced me, pushed me in the back of my own car, sat and like lied back in the back seat, drove to training, really ill, struggling. Like every time I moved, I felt I was going to be sick and pain. And then I remember being in the treatment room, just like almost like passing out. He's gone, oh, you're in a bad way. I said, yeah, yeah. He goes, it looks like you've maybe ruptured something, so we need to MRI scan it. But the pain was that much. I said, nah, I can't. Just give me some shot of something because I can't take the pain. So he goes, you know, we'll go A&E. So I've just gone to A&E and I've walked in there. Lady kind of clocked it straight away. Oh, it looks like your knee's infected. And I said, well, it was a gash. I don't know, whatever. So now, okay, we'll x-ray it. Then you go into triage and see someone. So we're going into triage now and we're going to the x-ray room. And luckily, it was all happened quite quickly, so there weren't too much waiting around. And I sat there and they took the x-ray, they asked me questions, when did it happen, blah, blah, blah. So in the x-ray now, they've seen two floating bones, they called it. And I was like, oh, I must have like shattered like my kneecap or something. Like, so I was like, oh man, don't need this. So I've gone into the triage bit and I've laid there and the doctor's gone, oh, so when did this happen? I said, Tuesday. She's gone, okay. And you didn't come to the hospital? I went, no. You didn't have a tetanus or no x-ray? I said, no, I just went home. They stitched up, give me antibiotics. She said, and the keeper's tooth went, yeah. And his, he lost his teeth, went, yeah. Did anyone check for his teeth? I went, no one checked. She went, bend your knee. I was sitting there like, oh, I can't bend. Just bend it. So I've bend it. And the pressure just popped the stitches and all pus came oozing out. And a bit gross. But the pressure like relieved so much tension and pain. So I was like, suddenly could just kind of bend my knee a little bit. And she's got tweezers and gone, let me have this little look. Just put the tweezers in, moved it around, just pulled out a tooth. I've gone, oh my God. And just sitting there, I was almost just like laughing with amusement. I was like, what? And then they've gone, oh. And at this point, they had in the x-ray. So I was like, oh, that's the floating bone. There's one more in there. She's gone, oh, we can't do no more. You need to stay. You're going to be, I'm going to keep you in now. You're going to have an operation tomorrow. We're going to have to, because I can see there's the impact has sheared your bone. So there's a mark on your bone. So there could be a potential bone infection. Your cartilage on your patellar tendon has been ruptured as well. So I was like, oh my gosh. Like, and I'm just sitting there, one of my teammates, just like, what the hell is going on? So next day, bang, I'm having an operation. They've repaired my patellar tendon. I found out I've got a bone infection from the tooth being in my knee. I'm not going to be able to walk for maybe 2 months. I had to have like the PICC line in my arm for up to 2 months, but luckily I fought it a bit quicker. But had to go to hospital every day. Had a nurse come around, give me the antibiotics in my arm. Mate, it would knock me out. I'd be just like the guilty. I'm like, gone. It was horrible. Honestly, it was horrible. And that was before even I could then build the damaged muscle. I had to beat the infection. She said to me that if I come in Saturday, it might have been a different story. You could have lost your leg. And the only interesting thing is that I was in an infectious disease ward. That's where I was after the operation. And then there was myself, a guy to my left, and two guys opposite me. The guy opposite me to the right, I'm there, like, oh, my knee, I was in pain. I was like, blah, blah, blah. The guy opposite me, his leg's off. So I've gone, you know what? I wouldn't even complain. I've got my leg. I'm not ever going to sit here and moan. At least I'm not, you know. So it kind of brought me down a bit and, you know, humbled myself a little bit. But I could have easily been him. And I might, like, sometimes people ask me, I kind of laugh, but why should it be any different? Because I've got my leg. It was that serious. I could be like legless now. You know what I mean? So effectively, because the infection made the recovery of the patella tendon more difficult, ultimately I couldn't get back to running, couldn't get back to where I was. So in the end, I had to just call it a day after almost over a year of trying to get back to fitness and stuff. And, you know, and I was still going well. I was still enjoying it. My pre-seasons were good. I was getting quicker times than I was maybe 2 years ago. And I would like to have gone on to, I reckon I could at least gone to, I was 40 and be like one of them legends that played well to the later, the twilight years. But unfortunately, it wasn't to be, you know. But in the same way, I'm grateful that I'm kind of making a fool. I'm getting there, making a good, healthy recovery. The infection's gone. I'm rehabbing my knee. And I've just kind of took cycling up as a way to sort of like keep, you know, the power and stuff in my legs and stuff. But yeah, it was freaky, man.
I was going to say about your cycling. Can we come on to that in a little bit? With that, okay?
Yeah, yeah, no problem.
Just because, obviously, I wanted to talk about, obviously, a lot of footballers say it's really difficult when you retire. Has it almost been easier for you because of the trauma that you went through, that you're almost grateful that, you know, not grateful that you're still around, you know? But do you know what I mean? It puts a different perspective on the retirement.
I think so. And like I said, I've always been quite level-headed. You know, I love football. I do a lot of things away from football in terms of, like, my mind's not always just football as well. So it's never been the be-all. I'm very focused. I love it. But I know there's a bigger world out there. And having this injury brings that all home. What's kind of really important at the end of it, you know? As much as you can invest everything into football and stuff, I just wanted to be able to walk and be healthy. Like, at one point, I was like, I feel so ill. Like, I was going to be able to go, like, have a shower properly. You know, I couldn't get into the bath. There's so many things that you take for granted that I couldn't do for a long time. And I was like, I just can't wait to do that. So once I could do that, it was still hard because I wasn't ready to kind of retire, if I'm honest. I was enjoying life and had kind of plans for a couple of things afterwards. But I think because of it, and then having that period of like still kind of still being under contract and stuff like that, you know, I could slowly retire in my mind, if you get what I mean. Didn't come to like an abrupt end. But sometimes you kind of want to do it after the length of career I've had. I kind of wanted to go out in a different way. So it was hard. And even now, you know, I love football, regardless if I'm playing it professionally or with my mates. I want to be able to play football with my friends, and I can't. And that's what annoys me. You know, much as, I've played, I enjoy training. Cool, I want fun football. I want to finish and play Power League with my guys and down the road. And I can't do none of that just yet. That's what annoys me more, but I'm just glad. And I think definitely, you know, if it didn't happen maybe and you just finish and you might go, football, blah, blah, blah. But because of this, I think it just puts things into perspective a little bit more than it maybe would have if it didn't happen. So I'm grateful for that in that respect.
I just want to ask Jabbo, now he's actually retired, and all the managers and coaches he played under, who would he list as his probably three biggest influences during his career?
What, the biggest influence in my career?
Yeah.
There's a few. I mean, I think I always have to start at the beginning, I guess, because, you know, about the experiences you got from the beginning, the people that you start with. So I like to say Martin Ling and Paul Brush and Chris Ramsey, if I can say those three, because they were a good tight team in the youth team in my development. Then I'll say John Gorman. I was at MK Dons. He really, like, took his time with me, really made me into, like, a consistent player. Really, really genuine guy, lovely guy. And then Keith Curl at Carlisle. I think those, like, those three like groups of people were like magnificent for me in my career. The attitude, the professionalism, Kikel was meticulous, but it was his own person. He was very quirky and individual. And I love that about people, you know. I really bounced off well with him and took a lot of what he said into my life going forward now as well. So yeah, those guys.
You mentioned earlier on about you're doing a lot of cycling now, and you've recently done a fundraising run for Mind Mental Health Charity. How did that all come about then? Was it just initially to start strengthening the knee, or was it something that you've always enjoyed? Or
no, I think I've never cycled a bike since I was probably a BMX when I was about 8 or something. So it's not something I've done forever, like since I was a little boy. I think the injuries happened and I had to probably take probably a year almost out of anything physical because I couldn't do any like running. I wasn't allowed to do running or any sort of physical activity. And I think come July, I think I was thinking, right, I'm tired of not like I didn't put on loads of weight, but for what I was like, I didn't like, oh, I had to be sharpened on it. And I noticed myself just not being the usual jab. So then I was like, okay, what can I do to sort of like exercise a bit more and have that enthusiasm? And the surgeon said, you know, you can spin on the bike, you know, keep your legs sticking over. And I was at a shop in Crouch End and I don't even know why I even stopped at the shop, to be honest with you, but I was outside this random bike shop and they had an array of rusty bikes outside, and I was like, yeah mate, you got any bikes going? And he goes, oh, those two for sale. I looked at one, was horrible, the other one was half decent. I said how much then? He goes, I looked at some guy, I said, how much did you pay for that? He goes, ah, oh. And he was a friend of the people in the bike store, so he weren't no help. And I said, like, £50. He was like, he's trying to sort of fleece me a little bit. So in my head I said, all right, £100 I'll pay for that, no more. So I've gone in £50. I'll give you £50 for it. He looked at me like, taking the piss. All right, 60. Deal. I went, yes. So I thought I got like, I got onto a winner. So I took this, honestly, old rally racer, rusty seat post. It was dead. But I thought, cool. In my mind, I thought I'm going to spruce it up. I'm gonna do some work to it. And it was obviously, I think it was July times, we're in the lockdown, it's all going down. So I thought, you know what, I've got some time. Let me go on YouTube and Pinterest and try and respray this bike and do it up myself. So I took it apart, sanded it all down, put my tunes on, put some good work in it. Maybe 3 weeks later, it was blue, I've turned it silver, green seat, it looks like really retro-y. And I started riding. So I started just going around town and enjoying it. It was so quiet then, you can ride through London. It was beautiful. I was like, bloody hell, I didn't know cycling's amazing sort of thing. You see so many sights that you wouldn't sort of take in when you're driving. So when it got kind of real, I think it's the competitiveness from football and sport, riding the hot towards Highbury, and some guys just whizzed past me. And he didn't look like someone who should be whizzing past me. So I was like, nah. So then I burned rubber to catch up with him. And I've gone, I was glowing like, how are you going so quick? He goes, you need one of these bikes. Your bike looks cool, but this is a road bike. You need to get a road bike like this, not a thing like that. So because of he kind of beat me, I went to the shop and said, look, I need a real bike and a proper bike. So there was a bike shortage. So what I sort of started out that I wanted to spend, it kind of went up and up and up and up. So I ended up buying a cool bike, and that's where it began. And then I started doing a lot more riding. I downloaded Strava. I'm here, there, and everywhere. And then one of my teammates who was also into riding told me, a group of his mates go out on a Sunday. Do you want to come and join them? And again, they've sort of taken up cycling through lockdown just for clearing their mind. You know what I mean? It's all going off. It was their time alone. So I joined them on this ride. And then me being the way I am, I got my new bike. I think I'm the boy. I try and we've gone from Hartford to Epping. And I tried to lead and think I was good. Oh, I got dropped. I was blown. I'm like, there's a lot to learn. So then I started, we started regularly riding with a crew, and then Jamal Campbell Rice, I think you Campbell yeah, as well.
Briefly, yeah.
He then I joined through him. Then I one of my friends, and then the group just got bigger and bigger. We were a group of guys that met kind of in December. I think they did a week ride, 1 week before I joined. They were a couple of them rid together, but it was probably like 6-7 of us that rid. Then it just grew. And then we had from 7, we had 14 to 20, and then we just grew it. And we started to get better, we started to improve. And obviously when a group of guys gets competitive, some of the best, it went that way. And then we started doing bigger distances. And then because of, we all kind of found, you know, I find it so refreshing. I've never, like I said, I never ridden a bike since I was a kid. I find it so refreshing just going through town. And I thought, and one of the guys said, why don't we, you know, it's for them. We spoke a lot about how good it is for yourself and that space. Why don't we were looking to ride to Brighton. And someone said, why don't we just try and raise money for them? And then we chose mine because it was similar to how we kind of got together as a collective. And we then, yeah, so we decided to, initially it was to Brighton. Someone kind of let it slip and back. So we're like, what? And back. So once we kind of went out and back, we kind of had to honour it. And it was tough. It was a slog. And because by then the group's really grown, not everyone's at that sort of high level. So you couldn't just leave people behind. So you had to kind of wait as well. So it made it a lot longer. And when you keep stopping and starting, your legs begin to seize up. So going on the home on the way back, it was tough. But the cause was magnificent. And I mean, from where we've come since December to now, it's amazing. And you look at our times from then to now, and we had a lot of support, you know, and we've managed to raise about 8.5K for mine charity. And I'm sure we'll probably try and do a lot more rides if we can help, like, raise awareness or good causes. And it's healthy for us. It's been magnificent. And it's just, again, something I've sunk my teeth into, excuse the pun, but it's been class, mate. It's been different gear, so that's the story. So
well, I'd tell you what, that's absolutely phenomenal. Well done on raising all that cash, brilliant. I mean, I reckon your next bike ride should probably be from the Orient to Carlisle, because how can you, you know, that'll be fantastic. And I reckon if you stopped off on the clubs that you played for on the way, and Campbell Rice as well, you know, between the two of you, there's a few clubs there. I reckon you would raise tens of thousands of pounds. Yeah, you know, let's get it doing, Jamie. Let's get the football community involved. Come on, you know.
That'd be some effort, mate. That'd be some effort. But to be fair, and all the clubs are along the way, they're actually en route. Oldham, Barnsley, they're all en route. You know what I mean?
Exactly, so, yeah.
You never know. You might be onto something. You never know. You never know.
Jabbo, listen, thank you ever so much for your time tonight. I really, really appreciate it.
Jabbo.
That's it. Fantastic. Thanks for having me on, guys. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Cheers, Jabbo.
There we go. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Darren. Thank you, Jamie. And obviously, Jabbo was in good form there. Sorry about the sound. It's one of those Zoom interviews, and obviously, it's a bit hit and miss with the sound sometimes on Zoom. But we're back in the studio here now. And as I say, we've got another interview coming up in the next 24 hours, I think, with Ross Embleton and with... James Brophy, indeed. How about that? I went blank then.
Forgot him
James
already.
I've forgotten about him already. Yeah, he's left. He's gone. That's it. We move on. Right. You've got some positional worries, haven't you, Christian? What have you jotted down for us?
Just that I think you noticed over the last few weeks people are getting a bit restless with people signing and not signing and people going away. I think the players that have gone away, as much as we'd like to keep them, I don't know about you, I think some of them moves are very much sideward move. I think I made a joke on Twitter that, you know, if Wilkinson wants to move to Walsall, I think he should have taken the money in Azerbaijan. I think that is a bit of a sideward move for us. But I think I said it last time I was on, I think the squad will take time to come together. They're not going to be all ready and set by pre-season. That'll give the youngsters a chance to press for their cases. But as I say, we've got 14 pros. Lee, what do you think about the rumours about Ryan Allsop, the goalie that's had some time at Orient previously?
I'd like to see
all sort of comeback. I mean, I remember him when he was with us originally, and then he went off to Bournemouth, and I think as I remember, it was like a bitter pill that he'd sort of gone, because I think we give him a chance in football as a first-team goalkeeper. He was really good. And at the time, he thought, oh, he's just taking the money to go and play Bournemouth. But he's built himself a very good career out of it. So yes, I'd love to see him come back.
How old is Allsop now, Lee? I remember when you were talking about it, and at that time we had a few really good keepers come in that season where we had about 28 keepers. He was one of them, wasn't it? But we had Button as well, didn't we? David Button as well was at the time. But how old is Allsop?
I think he was with us 2011, wasn't it? So he's got to be early 30s, 33, something like that.
Late 20s, I think.
Is it late 20s? Oh, even better.
Yeah. What would we say for him? Or there's also been a lot of talk about Jakupovic coming back. Obviously, he's at the wrong end of his career, obviously. Very short spell before, very much maybe a bit of a cult hero with us. A lot of people said if we'd had him in the playoff final, we wouldn't have lost. So, thoughts on that?
I mean, that's all true. I mean, his hero status, like cult status, yeah, if he'd have been playing in that final, we'd have won. But that was 7 years ago. What's he, 37, 38 now? He hasn't played much football in them years. For me, Allsop ticks all the boxes. Jakupovic would be more of a memory signing rather than a forward planning signing.
I think sorry to open our wounds, Orient fans, but I think, you know, that playoff final, I don't think it'd have been a playoff final. I think if he'd have been there for the last six or seven games that he wasn't there, I think we'd have made top two. I do remember that he got recalled when who was his parent company? Hull.
Hull, yeah.
Company, football club, I mean.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
His parent team, Hull, got their keeper sent off. And he was recalled. And I really do think that was a key moment in our season. And I think,
he was recalled twice, wasn't he?
He was recalled twice. And it was the Scottish keeper they had at the time, and he got sent off twice.
McGregor?
McGregor. And I remember cursing him. What did you do that for? Because he really damaged his knee. I'd like to see him back, but if he hasn't played much football, you know, you can't sign someone on memory and what they were, because he was the best keeper I've seen there. I mean, Vigor was very, very good as well. But
was it Shwanda Jalal? Was it?
It's a different end of the scale, Andy. We could talk about the Jalals and the Rahugbas, if you like.
Yeah. Who was it we got that? Was it both of them?
Shwanda Jalal and Rahugba, who was particularly
from
disappointing,
Leeds.
Let's say.
There was another one as well, weren't
there? Paddy Roach from the New Millennium.
I had a Leeds fan, mate, who, when we signed Rahugba, phoned me on the day and said, are you playing tonight? I said, yeah, Wickham. He said, you're losing. And he told me, and I said, no, it can't be that bad. And we were 2-0 down in about 20 minutes, and both were his fault. So,
well, we signed, was it Alnick as well? And he played that one game at Rotherham, weren't it? And Ben Alnick, yeah. One game at Rotherham, we lost that in the last couple of minutes.
I remember we went up to Chesterfield before under the Mad Italian, and we were visiting friends who lived in Chesterfield, season ticket holders, and they said that they nicknamed their goalkeeper Tommy Three. His name was Tommy Lee. He said, oh, he always lets in three. And Dean Cox scored in the stoppage time for the third goal that won it for us. And he came out and said, see, I told you, Tommy Three.
I've just looked and Allsop's 28. So
really,
for us, I think that would be a great signing. I think we hedge our bets and say that Viggs is not going to come back. Or he's leaving it, going to leave it as long as possible. But for me, Allsop would be a very strong keeper. We were just discussing Brill and whether people like Brill as a goalie or not. He was a vocal sort of communicator at the back, and I think that's something that Kenny Jackett will definitely want to sit alongside his senior pro. So that's definitely a goalie that I hope we are.
Do you want these people though that aren't signing? Do you really?
No, I don't.
You know,
I don't. I think we've
gone past it, haven't we?
We've had a WhatsApp group, and I think we all sort of said the same thing. I don't know whether it's because we haven't been massively over the last year and we couldn't get to games, but for me, I didn't have a great affiliation with any of them. There's some good players in there, but you know, if they want to move to Mansfield and places like Walsall over Leighton Orient, then for me, off your pop, really. That's not a career move for me. There's no one, you know. Brophy's got a 3-year deal with a team in Division One. Fair play to him. He's done his time. But as for the rest, you know, if they don't want to sign, then we're best off building a team that want a beer and want to wear a shirt with a bit of pride.
I think the one thing, like I've always said, League Two players, every League Two player is replaceable. No one at League Two holds a club to ransom. if they don't want to sign, then they go and we move on. And with the right recruitment, you get better players in.
Well, whilst I agree with you, Chaps, about if you don't want to play for the club, don't play. It's sorry to be devil's advocate here, but there was a couple of players that have left that I did enjoy watch playing, and Wilkinson was one of them. And I will miss him on the pitch because he could do anything on the ball. All right, yes, he'd be temperamental when he used to spend 5 seconds arguing with a ref if he lost the ball rather than chasing back. But I did used to enjoy seeing him on the ball. That goal he scored up at, was it Salford, where he beat two or three, well, correct me, lads, where he picked it up in his own half, ran down a right wing, cut inside, beat two or three players and scored. You know, moments like that are worth them players being here for. But obviously he's gone, we move on.
But Barry,
I will miss watching him play.
It was alleged that, I mean, it's allegedly, we have to say that as a caveat, really, that he refused to play as a centre-forward when asked to.
I think now, if you're a professional player, you should play where you're asked to play.
Listen, I mean, that's, to me, that's a bit poor management, really, because you should put your foot down and say, like, you'll play where I tell you to, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, personally, that sort of player, if I was the manager, they'd be out the door anyway. You know, the minute they start telling you that they're not going to play somewhere when you've asked them to. I mean,
well, manager means managers, isn't it? Yeah,
exactly that. Right, you know, so there may be a case where, Barry, you know, you play at right back or whatever, but I'm going to say, look, Barry, we've got a problem. Yeah, we're going to have to play you in the middle of the park.
No, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, exactly. So you'd be out the doors if I was the manager.
Well, funny enough, I did for Folds and I did vote it. But yeah, if you're a player, you play wherever the player, especially professionals, it's your living.
You know, the manager knows if you make a mistake, it's not your position and you know, you did your best.
Well, that never happened.
You know, but, you know, so if that was true with Wilkinson, then, you know, that to me, that's a terrible attitude.
Yeah.
I think we'd all agree that there's some really good players there. But as Lee said, but bottom line is, you know, we offered them probably decent contracts and they've turned it down. So at the end of the day, you know, as much as I enjoyed Wilkinson, I think the off-field, shall we say, queries about him, I don't think Kenny Jackett would have stood for. And, you know, did we get the best out of Danny Johnson and, you know, did we play to a system that suited him? I still think that he's got 20 goals. He's probably got 16, 17 of those early. And then was he the same player when he come back from injury? So who knows? What I'm confident in, I think in the last two or the first two signings that Jackett's brought through the door, I think he's a man of stature that's going to, you know, bring better football players to the football club, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a step up, isn't it? The signings that have come in on what we had last season.
Well, you know, as I say, the first two have played, you know, week in, week out in Division One. That can only put us in good.
That's your answer, isn't it?
Exactly.
Straight away, if they've played 40-odd games in a division higher last season, you know. And I mean, I remember when we signed Kevin Dickinson. He's going back into the 80s from Charlton, but Dicko had played 40-odd games for Charlton in League. What was the Championship now?
Yeah.
And he dropped down two divisions, basically because they'd signed a fellow, I think, from Celtic for quite a lot of money to play at left back, and he knew his days were numbered. So he signed for the Orient two divisions lower, but was their player and players' player of the year the following year because he stood out like a sore thumb. It was such an improvement. And that's the same thing. You go up a division or two and you get an ever-present and you signed him.
I think people have just got to be patient. I think Lee said it earlier, like, there's not many Division Two teams at the moment wheeling out signings every couple of days. It takes time, especially if you want to get the right man in. You know, they'll have a list of probably 10 players for each position, and you start at the top and work down. And, you know, those players in the top might be in the under-23s in the Championship. They might be, you know, out of favour in Division One, and you work down the list and see what you can get. It's not, you know, you phone up a player one day and the next day you've got it all signed, sealed and delivered. These things take time, and, you know, I think if people show a bit of patience, we'll be all right.
I think regarding signings this summer, it's slightly different as well, because, I mean, if some of these players have finished the season, they've had a long season, they've gone away at a little trip abroad, they're coming back for 10 days isolation. So they might not be able to be ruled out straight away and announced and all that. They might have to wait for that 10 days before they can come to the club. And like, so I think there's a lot more involved in announcing signings this summer than there normally is.
What I'll say so far is the two signs that we got in, it may be a coincidence or it may be that, you know, we can read something into this, but they seem to be strong characters. So we know what Darren Pratley's about and we know what Beckers is about. And I think you refer to Christian as people off the field, maybe you wouldn't put up with their antics and that. I think maybe I'm reaching out wrong here, but he seems to be wanting to build a team of strong characters and winners and go-getters. And maybe they didn't fit into that mould, maybe.
Right, fair enough. Now, just coming towards the end of the evening, and Lee, you've done a lot of work to raise some money over the last couple of weeks. Just tell everybody about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been mentioned a few times that our ex-player, Paul Linger, he's had a bad time. He's got pancreatic cancer, and he's got his two young boys. So we've set about trying to raise a few quid for him to have a bit of time with his boys before. And like I said, the sad thing is that one of his boys lost his mum as well. We got the two shirts, Leicester shirt, signed by Jamie Vardy, and the Aston Villa signed shirt as well. We put them up to auction and had a late bid from Jay Pittard, who's won the bidding on £575 for Jamie Vardy's shirt. And we've had an anonymous bid who's come through, Cole Griffiths, and he's bid £300 for the Aston Villa shirt. So, like, thank you to them two. Obviously, that money will be coming very handy. The GoFundMe page is still active. We're still trying to get as much money as we can. I think we're just short of £4,000 on that. So, like, I just want to thank everyone who's donated and who's retweeted and just got behind the appeal. He's like very much appreciated, and I know Paul Linger. I spoke to him yesterday, and I know he can't thank everyone enough.
Right. Well, thanks, Lee. Thanks, Christian. Thank you, Barry. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And Nick, I was going to say Neil. Then Nick's up next with Curveballs. We'll catch you next week. In the meantime, though, don't forget we've got an Orient Hour extra coming up tomorrow, I believe. So keep your eyes and ears peeled for that.
Sign up to pump. It's Brisbane Road. It ain't White Hart Lane. That's the wrong postcode. It ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. There's flats in every corner of the ground. You can get your kids in just £5. Get an Orient here. It's only a quid. But there ain't no lids, cos it's an up-to-pump. It's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. We had an FA Cup 78. We had John Sear, that is most irate. We were club. Shirtsley and Chris Tate's hair. I remember the moment that Lee Steele scored. I remember it's done on the message board. I remember the pleasure. I remember the pain. And I want to hear rocking all over the world again. It's St. Upton Park. It's Brisbane Road. It ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode. It ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. This is St. Upton Park. It's Brisbane Road. It ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode. It ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world. Till the end. If I thought you'd score, but I haven't seen a goal in God knows when. And I wanna hear rocking all over the world again. Cos it's ain't Upton Park. It's Brisbane Road. It ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode.
On the hour across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM News.